Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled Salmon with Earworms. And as disgusting as that title sounds, it's about something very pleasant. This is about the band Peardown, and our guest is the band Peardown. You want to introduce yourselves, Well, we'll explain what the title means later, maybe. Or people just live in cognitive dissonance until it's over.
We thrive on cognitive dissonance.
Yes!
I'm Raymond, guitar player and singer.
I'm Jeff, percussion dulcimer.
David, I'm a singer and guitar player.
And Susan, banjo and voice.
Fantastic. And thank you all for agreeing to do this and meeting late on a Sunday night. Even though you probably have lives and work and stuff, but so we'll do this as quickly as possible. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for doing this. And well, I guess the meaning of the title is you have a cassette coming out soon, correct?
Yep.
And there is a song in there called The Salmon. And it is ridiculously catchy. It is ridiculously... what you guys do is so fantastic in its delicacy, its intelligence, and just the sheer number of hooks is...
If you write enough parts, you might eventually have some hooks. And that song in particular has lots of parts.
Yeah, and so what is your composition process like as a band? Because... Again, everything is just so rich. I mean, how do you get that sort of rich sound as a unit?
Well, that particular song evolved over a number of years. Mm. And I remember this is going back a number of years. I had this idea. I was listening to a lot of classical pieces. Mm. So you had these suites, which had multiple movements, and I thought an interesting way to organize a series of movements would be to use a metaphor, you know, the life cycle of a salmon as a musical metaphor. Mm. And then lyrically I tried to follow suit as well. So it really has three distinct parts, and that was something that Raymond and I, at the time, this is before Sue and Jeff joined us, we were trying to work a little bit longer in our compositions, because previous to that, most of our stuff was clocking in 2.5 minutes and really just one idea.
Yeah, so. I always tell people that the demo that Dave passed me when we first met, the original Peardown demo, Dave was going as Peardown before we started playing together. Mm. The original demo that he recorded solo was 6 songs, I think, in 11 minutes, and I was really attracted to that. So it fit, like, very economical and no superfluous anything, and I thought that was really, really cool. And of course, when you combine two people with, like, kind of the same kind of ideas, and then guitar and Dave's guitar playing started to really flower after we started playing together, and then the songs just started getting... Then we started doing instrumentals, and some of the longer forms and adding more parts and stuff came out of that. And then when we went back to writing songs, vocals, we both, the Salmon and 70s Burt, both came out of, like, I'm working on a long one too, you know? And so we both had to learn each other's long one at the same time, these two songs that combined had so much musical information that it really took a couple of years to get everything right on those particular songs.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. Wow.
That was before these guys even were involved.
It took a while to learn it. It took them a while to write it. And then, you know, it wasn't, it had to just sink in. It just took a while to make it a part of you. And I don't think I achieved it, but there's a real beauty in those songs.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so do you then find, like, as a collective then, you know, it's like, one of the things I've been sort of fascinated by and been thinking about a lot lately is the way, you know, intelligence and genius is sort of communal. And it's how it's really important to be with other creative, intelligent people. And there's this, like, sort of weird osmosis that happens.
Sure.
And, you know, so is it a question of, like, how have you all sort of influenced each other as, you know, oh, we have someone with a dulcimer to play. You know, I could write that. Or is it, I mean, it, you know, the way that your musical brains might be different now? Or
I think in any band that Jeff plays in, people try and get all of his get all of his instruments involved if possible.
Well, it was interesting when Susan and I started playing with Dave and Ray. You know, they had their thing that they were doing, and it was complex. It was dense, and for us to dense musically. And it really was a challenge to figure out how to add other musical elements to that without getting in the way of the beauty of what they already had.
Yeah.
Because the two guitar parts were weaved together so tightly, it was, well, if we're going to add things, especially with drums, to think about how to, drums and percussion, how to add stuff to the music that wouldn't get in the way, but would really serve the music and propel it in just the right way. So these guys gave me really free rein to just come up with ideas, and we share a lot of very similar references in terms of the kinds of things that we all enjoy listening to. So I think we already were starting from a place where we were kind of on the same page. Now it was just a question of what's going to work.
I like that, and I think you could really hear, you know, that's such an interesting thought, too, of thinking about then, yeah, getting out of the way, when to be quiet. And I think that's, for me, what is really compelling for me for the songs is their delicacy.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking about, I guess for me, you know, musically, you know, you come into the world or whatever, and you're an angry young man. It's punk rock, and it's gonna be loud. And you know,
we all did it.
We all, yeah, and thinking about, for me, also the way that, you know, bluegrass is sort of an older form, to still find, for that to be a platform for innovation, is
sure.
Also, I think, really uncanny and really, you know, moth to bug zapper. For me, you know,
yeah,
bug zapper.
You know, acoustic music is become kind of the underground music because you can't kill them with volume or with anger, like you said, or anything like that, or histrionics. You know, you kind of have to weave some kind of story into it with a different element, you know, and catch your ear with a different element, because you're never going to win the volume war or the hook war, for that matter. You know, if you start playing folky music and start sounding too universal or accessible, I mean, some people do really well at it, but it just, you want some kind of authenticity, you know, some kind of like connection. I think for us, a lot of it's like an intellectual connection, like with the musical. Intellectual, where it's like, oh, these are cool things that we're putting together, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When Sue and Jeff joined us over a year ago now, we didn't really have preconceptions about what we thought it would sound like or what we hoped it would sound like. Mm-hmm. We just really respected the two of them and wanted them to be themselves in the sound. And I do think there's kind of a sound there. Mm-hmm. It just evolves because you have this unit that Jeff referred to, Raymond and I, we've been playing together for 10 years, and then just the individual personalities of Susan and Jeff kind of joining in, you know, it is what it is because of the people involved more than the idea or any kind of preconception.
Yeah, if you tried to sound a certain way, you probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, Ray and Dave brought Sue and I in to just do what we do along with them, not really having any idea what that was going to be all about.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of trust.
Yeah,
I was amused and surprised. I'm like, why do you want a banjo? You know, well, why not?
Why not?
But, but I think, you know, it's I play in a real delicate way. Mm. And my specialty is playing things other than bluegrass.
Mm.
So I do old time, Appalachian, a little bit of Irish, blues. I love pop music and rock music, so sometimes I get stuck playing banjo in certain genres of music because that's what people expect or that's the work I can get.
Mm.
So for me, this was, you know, playing a different type of music that I've always been, you know, into and listening to, but didn't always get to play on banjo. And the whole guitar thing, I usually take the place of a guitar in a band, so for me to play with guitars was really, I had to work with their language, and usually I don't have that issue. So I was trying to find where I fit in with the guitars. I found I fit in with the percussion, with the drum, because the banjo's really a percussion instrument.
Yeah.
Dave and I come out of this solo guitar school, and since we've been playing together, like a way of putting duos together where one or both of us are playing a bass line at the same time as whatever the high part of the melody might be.
Mm-hmm.
So Sue got to be kind of like part rhythmic underpinning, part melodic reinforcement, and then part kind of just ornamentation over the whole thing. Just gave it another dimension. But she, you know, we don't have a bass player most days. We have one, but he doesn't live in Pittsburgh, so we only get together, you know, for very special events like this show in a couple of weeks or in a week. He's going to be here for that, and I played bass on the record just to fill out the sound. But when there is no bass, it's important texturally. Sue adds a rhythmic reinforcement that normally you might hear from a bass player, but she's got a very steady, like steady way that she rambles and rocks, you know, under what we do.
Fantastic. So do you find as a unit that either, because this is a sort of a aesthetically philosophical question that I also wonder about sometimes, do you find genre to be at times constraining, or do you find it liberating?
Nobody's really tried to call us anything in a while, you know, so it's never like we felt like there was an expectation for what we were gonna, what people were gonna expect when we showed up.
Yeah, we put the term or the words folk rock on our website almost knowing that a lot of in the first go around, like in the late 60s, folk rock was kind of something that made people want to puke when they heard it, you know, because the people coming out of the folk revival resented
going electric.
A rock production behind folk music as being sort of a commercial gesture, and a lot of them were, you know, anti-commercial, obviously, and it kind of has this black mark on it. But at the same time, a lot of the records that we listen to, you know, just sitting on the front porch, are folk rock records. Whether it's, you know, the Byrds or you know, Pentangle, or you know, any number of
Grateful Dead on
Grateful
your porch.
Dead, yeah. Sure. I mean, they all identify as those two things fused together. So,
and it doesn't, that term doesn't mean much to people these, like, yeah. It's pretty open to people these days.
Yeah.
It might give you more of a feeling than to just say we were an indie rock band or an indie folk band. It's like that would be almost too wide open. you say folk rock, it's like something. it's right. It doesn't hit the nail on the head, but we're in there somewhere.
Yeah, I think the genre categories just serve to. They just try to bring, I think at best, a little description to the music. You know, by calling something folk rock, it implies a certain kind of momentum. What's the motion in the music? How is that music, you know, moving? You know, a lot of people think of folk music as just being kind of flat and it's just not having a lot of a big dynamic to it. You add the rock element to it, it broadens the dynamic, but still kind of obscures the detail. You know, so you have a lot of folk music has a different kind of beauty in the detail and is maybe missing something in the drive. A lot of rock music maybe doesn't always have the same kind of detail, but it has the drive. So you combine the two, and semantically, you still wind up not speaking to half the people who are reading or thinking about it because it means different things to different people.
Yeah.
So
I'd say pared down music has a lot of detail.
It's got a lot of detail, it's got a lot of motion, it's got a lot of drive.
And it's got drive.
And it's all good. You got to call it something. Otherwise, people are just like, well, what?
Yeah.
Huh? What?
Yeah. A lot of times people ask me what we sound like, and I'll try and think of something that would be like, oh, well, don't really sound like them, but we all like Pentangle a lot, and you'll just look in their eyes and be like, you know that they don't know what you're talking about, but they're like, yeah. And then you say, or like, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to make the connection with the average person on the street, but they hear it and they know what's going on. It's not like super obscure form of music, you know, it is kind of rock and folk music, but it's hard to draw a straight line to some other band that most people would recognize.
Yeah, those poor people who don't know Pentangle.
I feel for them and their families.
Yeah, yes. Which I will say. So when you gave me the record, this cassette to sort of, or the files to sort of preview, I happened to purchase the 2-disc. Set of the Pentangle BBC recordings at the same time. You guys are great. They won. They won that week.
Yeah.
But you guys are fantastic. So actually, do we want to play? Do we want to
music?
Yeah.
No, because we don't have all our instruments.
Don't have all of your instruments.
But if you wanted to cut in a song from the. From the record, you play.
Oh, let's! I'd love to.
You can play
do
anything
that.
You want.
I could play anything I want. Is there anything you want me to play? Particular, you know, what's the big hit single?
Yeah, the one about the earworms.
Yeah.
The one about the.
You could play. Why don't you play the salmon? And
I will kind of play the salmon
title track for the podcast.
Absolutely, and actually, in terms of any pretense, you know. So what I will do is I'm going to pause this recording, and we're going to pretend like we just listened to the sound.
Nice.
Yes, it's going to be a little acting, a little falsehood. Sorry, but we're being real people. I'm letting you know. So let me pause for 1 second.
Crashes in. made of starlings in the northern sky, on the edge of town. Each year around this time, what spurs them no one can divine. A traveler stands caught in his tracks and frames the spectacle on his display, with uncovered hands turning red in the wind that brings the tap tap in from your
back. And Raymond, did you enjoy listening to it all these times now? Or?
It's always a treat.
It's always a treat.
What were all those noises at the end, Jeff?
We just threw a bunch of stuff up in the air and where it landed. You know, it was like some of it landed in some water and some of it.
A shout out to our friend Dave Bernabeau, who helped with the sonic collage in the third section, which was Jeff's pulling out everything in his bag of tricks.
That,
really,
that was another example of these guys, giving me the room to just come up with stuff. And I'm like, you know what? I think would sound really great here if I hit this Tibetan cymbal and I dip it in this bucket of water. The sound will bend, and it'll sound really cool here as an effect in this part. And then if I bow the gong over here and bring out some long tones from that, that will create, you know, some interesting effects that when we mix this and put the right effects on these kinds of sounds, it'll be cooler than any electronics that you might put on there.
Yeah, we recorded Jeff just doing all kinds of stuff, not not even necessarily with the music. It was just like this big, big group of sound bits. And we actually gave them over to the recordist, this guy Jay, who recorded our record. And he kind of arranged them the way that made sense to him and put some different effects on it and really nailed that kind of feel for that part, which was to just go to, like, I mean, Dave and I are playing these cluster chords. It's kind of just linear. And then there's all this headphone candy going on in the background. It's very cool.
Yeah, all the percussion sounds were all responses to these clusters of chords that that were already down, and it was kind of like an echo of those things. Music of the spheres.
Kind of. It all comes around to the fact that salmon, the species, is so weird. You know, like,
yeah.
The way they go out to sea, like, 1,000 miles, and then they come back to the same place where they started to die. You know, like, it's just a weird, when you talk about metaphysical ideas. And I think a lot of people have recognized this about that species, but, like, part of the theme in the song is this, like, predetermined behavior, you know, that some species seem to have. That's why there's a line in there about starlings too, that seem they fly in this sort of
murmurs,
right? And there are these places where tourists gather in, like, northern Scandinavia just to watch them because they're so fantastical, and these creatures doing, like, bizarre things, you know. So
instinctually
yeah,
essentially, which I think also comes to this question then it's forming in my mind. So how do you know when a song is finished? So you're saying that some of these songs have been conceived
children
years ago.
Yeah, well, those two, the salmon and the other, the longest song on the record is called 70s Bert, and those two songs were the beginning of the group of songs that became the record. And but us starting those predated Sue and Jeff by a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And by the time those guys got on, there was nothing to do but to work them into those songs, because mm-hmm. Dave and I had just worked so hard putting them together. But now we've kind of entered another phase of the band where we're writing new material, and the songs come to this room where we practice, not finished. Mm-hmm. So those, this is kind of long way around your question. I know a song is done when I'm reasonably happy with it, and when I'm so excited for Dave to hear it, or now these guys to hear it, that I kind of just tell myself to create a structure for it, create a lyric for it, and bring it in. Because we have precious little time to actually work together on stuff in the same room, that I want to do as much work as possible on the songs that I write, usually, before the band hears them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work for a long time on the little ideas that I have. I'll just mull them over. I'm like the opposite of Jack Kerouac, whatever. You know, I tinker.
So. And I think because of the density, the musical density of the music, I think we, in most cases, with something like the Salmon or 70s Bert being the exceptions, in most cases we work in forms, you know, where we say, like, okay, well, this song's got verses and you know, quote unquote choruses and a bridge and maybe a coda and maybe an intro, but we're not just going out there compositionally and trying to break new ground as far as song structures and stuff. So it's kind of one of those, well, I'll bring that part back. I'll write another verse, you know, or put, this needs a bridge. That's kind of one of the things that if a song's not done when the band gets a hold of it, it's like kind of needs something, just one thing, either in the middle or at the end. And, but we, you know, they're kind of pop structures or tweaked out pop structures for the most part.
Yeah, that Jack Kerouac ruined a generation of writers with that, you know, mythology of...
It is mythology, isn't it?
Yes, it is. First thought, best thought, mm-hmm. is Mac people. Sorry, I teach composition, so it's...
Yeah.
English composition, I mean, should say, not musical composition.
It's good they let you smack people now.
It's nice. Well, you know, the Republicans are in power again, and, you know, whatever you can say about that. But, yeah, so corporal punishment is back now. In my mind, in my fantasies, in my desires, it's back. But, you know, I remember I got to meet Donald Hall before he was poet laureate, and I always had this sort of anxiety of completion, you know, in my own kind of creative work. And I was, well, how do you know? And he, you know, someone who has poems that are sort of anthologized, and you might read them in high school or whatever, and he carried around with him these reader's copies of his books that he was still annotating. Mm-hmm. He was still messing with commas 40 years later.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, well, that's liberating. I can, you know, finally, okay. Just because it's out there doesn't mean it's done, right? Yeah.
Well, I've always really adhered to the idea that a good song can have lots of lives, you know? Like we conceived of a few songs that are on this record as guitar duets, and then we turned them into full band pare-down songs with kind of just stuff that we wouldn't have even imagined in the first place, you know? So I think a good song, like, when I always tell people that when I try and write a song for this band, I think Dave thinks the same way, just because it moves at this slow-ish pace, that we kind of imagine ourselves singing this song for indefinitely, you know? Whereas I used to have a record label, and it was the most frustrating thing in the world. The band would hand you the master for their latest record, which is coming out some point in the future, and they would be like, finally, that's out of the way. We can forget about that and do the next thing. And it's like, oh, well, you know. So I kind of consciously ran away from that. It's like, if something's going to make it to this room, it's going to be worth something, and it's going to be worth working on and us having to hear for a long time to get something great out of it.
Well, I think we all share a common way of looking at this, where it's, at least in terms of making records, you know, it's difficult with music to think about something being definitive, you know, because over time your perspective changes a little on it. So it's I think it's often more a question of, can you make something that lives on in a timeless way, where you can put it on and listen to it, listen to the lyrics, listen to the music 5, 10, X amount of years later, and feel like, I can listen to that. That holds up as a statement. But those statements change. You know, in the performance medium, nothing stays the same. You know, a few years later, you're ready to reinterpret something, especially if it's really good. You know, all of a sudden you start hearing it, seeing it differently. You know, my background is in a lot of improvised music and kind of jazz-oriented music. That's what that's all about, is that interpretive thing where you have a piece of music and it's like, okay, that's the version now. What about, you know, the next time we play it, it's going to be a little different because you're going to bring something different to it. So making records and performing music is two very separate things, I think.
Which I think is also something that's really fantastic that I find about what you all do for me is this idea of commitment, this idea of, you know, taking time, being slow, being soft, being delicate, which is so... I like what you're saying, Raymond, earlier about the underground, you know. I mean, those things, you know, are so seemingly marginalized in our culture. Sometimes, you know, everything is disposable, everything is fast. Again, you know, I live in the minds of 18-year-olds who are sort of, you know, programmed, I think, by a lot of things to think, no, it's now, and that's it.
Yeah, last year's model, you know, you don't, we're writing music that doesn't have a dependable audience or any clear formula for success or any real clear, in Pittsburgh anyway, venues, you know, of support. You know, there's no community of support for the kind of artsy folky rockin' music that we're making, it's kind of totally different than everything else. So again, it's like we have to please ourselves, you know, and play stuff that we're gonna want to hear over and over as we try to get it as close to perfect as we can stand, you know. So it's there's little chance of making a record a year like some bands do, and there's not the audience for it for any band almost, you know. It's I think most bands now take a little more time and make the record a little bit better just so it makes a bigger impact than try and just like, you know, knock one out as often as possible. I still know some people that do that, but yeah.
That's like the most punk rock thing I think I've heard someone say in a while, actually. You know, and this thought of, I guess for you guys, you know, making virtue out of necessity, but also, maybe, is it not care about audience, or is it just, you know, is it just the love that's in this room for the sound, the ideas?
And we want people to dig it, that's for sure, you know, but there's no kind of, there's no ready concession we can make to make that any more likely. You know, we're gonna do what we're gonna do, and so hopefully some heads get with it, you know, when we play live or when the records come around.
See, yeah, I mean, because, you know, Mumford and Sons, they have to worry about shifting units.
They, I'd imagine.
They got to pay back their advance.
Yeah,
this is true. Yeah, there's no pare down recuperative. Then is that, you know,
only to ourselves?
Oh, good.
We just have to make back dozens of dollars.
Yeah, which I think, I'm sure though that I make that joke though, but I mean that I'm sure that for you guys also is an incredible amount of freedom to just sort of pursue. You know, I don't say. Art for art's sake is such like a loaded term, but this idea that, you know, well, you know, you don't care, you know, or you do care, but it's not, you know, please like me kind of, you know, or yeah, I got to pay back the tour bus recuperative or anything like that.
Well,
which
you were talking about how hooky some of the tunes are, and so obviously it means that the music is coming from a place where it's not so esoteric or thoughtless in terms of how it's being communicated. You know, we're all influenced by a lot of music, and a lot of that music is about, you know, communicating directly to people, because a lot of the music that we all love is that. It comes from that. It's I think it's more the intention of, you know, you're not looking to make a killing with it in some way. It's like just the inherent thing is it's already plugged into this place that it's going to communicate to people. If you felt the hook of it, then it's, you know, that's a good testament that it's there. It's more the how you go about putting it out there.
Well, and I say that too, because then it's like I wake up with these songs in my head, like days later, I'll wake up and, you know, and I don't know the musical term for it. You know, there'll be like something that it is one of those songs that'll just be in my head.
Well, it's a good thing, because in the case of this band, there's going to be something challenging right around the corner from whatever that thing that's stuck in your head. So that's kind of the ultimate goal, you know, is that you can expand somebody's kind of sensibilities. And that's one of the big things about this band, is that we weren't challenged. Like, we're all pretty musically proficient. We can kind of communicate whatever our minds want to do, but we always want to challenge ourselves. So that's going to come across in the records, that even though those, like Jeff said, there's these natural things that you just naturally communicate through the universal musical ideas that always pop up, we always are consciously trying to challenge or push or twist what we can do, and I think we are doing that for the people that are listening to, you know. I think we've presented some things that people would call unexpected or more expansive ideas, you know.
So this sounds very wonderful and very harmonious and stuff like that. So I'm gonna purposefully be a bad journalist, one of those kind of jerky journalists. So you talk about, so I want to hear about, A, your shared influences, right? And of course, Bert Jansk and Pantagle and stuff like that, yes. But also, are there any sort of controversial musical figures in this band's history where somebody says, oh, I listened to, oh, you know, do you have anything that you don't share musically?
Probably.
You know, where you go, no, that band sucks, or, you know.
Well, look around these guys, how they have many, many degrees, multitude more records than I'll ever own. So I'd say Jeff and Sue have.
We listen to so much stuff, everything. You know, that it's, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of world music here. Yeah. We're at Jeff and Susan's house, and, you know, more contemporary singer-songwriter and folk music in this collection, you know.
Yeah, a lot of it is people doing a, I mean, we keep referencing, excuse me, a group like Pentangle. Pentangle is a great example of a group that took a folk music bass and, you know, they rocked a bit, but their thing was way jazzier. It came more from a jazzy place. You know, you had the two guitar players who were deep into traditional music of their own and of the Americas and Britain, and a singer who sang all these British things. But the rhythm section were a bunch of jazz dudes, you know, and they really, the combination of the elements in that band was really pretty extraordinary, because, you know, the level of listening to make that all work and to bring these different influences and make it work the way it did, to me that was an extraordinary thing. You know, it's affected the way I perceive any ensemble of music. So a lot of the stuff that we're all listening to is stuff that's got elements of that. It's like, how do you bring different things together and not make it feel like faux conglomerate? Or how does it all come together and create something different? And I think that's a lot of what Pare Down's thing is becoming. So we're all bringing very, very different references. You know, Dave references stuff all the time. I never listened to a lot of this stuff, you know, but it's like, it's totally cool, you know, some of the bands that he listened to. And, you know, in terms of any kind of stuff that you wouldn't talk about, I don't think that's the case here. It's like everybody's open to stuff. So yeah, it's like,
everybody enjoys quality, and you know, it's like, sure, if one of us is listening to a particular hip hop record, or, you know, I might listen to a heavy metal record or something, it's not going to end up in this room really in our musical conversation, but it's not like anybody would poo-poo it, you know?
Yeah.
So, because I was even looking, you have the Ali Farka Touré sleeve there, and I was like, oh, I haven't listened to that record in forever, but that,
well,
to
me... Should.
I should! I should look right now.
See, that's another timeless kind of thing. That's, you know, African music coming to America and creating American blues, and then that American blues going back to Africa and informing a whole new generation of guitar players and musicians. You know, the circle of what that Malian style of guitar and bluesy, what genre-wise, what they've been calling desert blues. Mm. You know, it's an extraordinary thing of thinking Africa coming here, creating John Lee Hooker influencing Ali Farka Touré. And it's like, wow, this is like the coolest thing. You know, it keeps going and changing and evolving, and the influences just keep overlapping. That's what it should be all about. You know, wide open and open to love.
That sounds lovely. Mm-hmm. All right, well, hey, so the record coming up, so how do people get this into their hands? How do people get Pare Down into their hands? I guess it's now time for the plug.
Well, the new...
The hard sale.
The new tape, it's called... Or the new album is coming out on cassette and digital. It's called Reach to Ring. And it'll be available through, you know, directly from us at shows, through Bandcamp. You can get the physical stuff. I'm sure it'll be in the shops here in Pittsburgh. And then on all the digital services for either downloading or streaming. We're going to do some more regional touring this year, certainly. And, you know, I don't think we're going to chase, like, a lot of national distribution or anything. You know, we're just kind of going to sell it ourselves and communicate it ourselves. And but it'll, you know, we'll have it. We'll keep it in print for you.
Fantastic.
We're working on a new record now.
Yeah, it's true.
So.
Yeah, it was exciting, you know, as we touched on earlier, Raymond and I brought 8 songs in, and Jeff and Sue learned them, and then we proceeded. Now, for this new record, we're all 4 of us throwing in on the ideas and developing everything together, so it should be a little bit more, like, it's the next step. So
yeah, we've started writing specifically to, you know, to the styles that everybody's playing here, but we're also writing specifically to Sue's voice. You know, like Sue kind of came in on harmony on the last record, and, you know, very, very ably, and a lot of people have commented on how cool the blend is of all of our voices, but now I'm writing to, like, song that I'm just going to give Sue to sing, mm-hmm. you know, and there's going to be more of that. You know, and there's a couple things already that are just songs that we wrote that Sue is carrying, you know, as a vocalist. So that didn't exist on the last record and will exist on the next record.
Yeah, our experience working together influenced the new material. Mm-hmm. And there's more openness in this new material. There's more space for the banjo to do its thing, where before I kind of had to keep my part pretty simple and find space for myself, because they had already created all the design of the pieces. And so now with the banjo, I find also with other people I play, I need room to let the banjo be itself, otherwise you're trying to conform it into, you know, other musical space where it's hard to fit in sometimes. It doesn't have its natural gift when you give it some room to move and just let it do its banjo thing. It just, there's nothing like it.
So Paradown is the infinitely expanding.
Yeah.
Sounds lovely. And so your album release show, since a lot of folks in Pittsburgh, well, at least the majority of my audience is my friends who live in Pittsburgh. So this is going to be out a week before?
The official release date is the 14th of April. Records come out on Fridays now.
That's right.
Not Tuesdays, which we all grew up with.
Bummer.
So the record comes out on you know, this coming Friday. It'll be officially available, but we're having our release party for it on the 18th, which is the following Tuesday at Club Cafe.
Fantastic.
Fine, speaking of banjo player, Devin Neil Flaherty is opening, and he's a really wonderful banjo player and songster and record collector and just a wonderful young man. And then James Hart of Harlan Twins and many, many great local kind of rootsy bands and rock and Americana-ish kind of bands is gonna open as well. They're gonna be the local support for the show. Should be a really cool night.
Fantastic. And you could also find out about all things Paradown at paradown.net. Correct? Fantastic. All right. Now it's time for, let's try the bottom five. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you all ready? And of course, all right. And since
we have
this
to
is
come to consensus.
Yes. So this answers. Is now, for those of you outside listening, you can now, you know, everything's been very harmonious and wonderful, and I think it's really, for me, actually, thank you for doing this, because I'm just more, you know, curious as to thinking about, like, how these songs come together, how these things that I'm sort of fascinated by come together, and so thank you. So now, thank but you. Now we get this other exercise in band psychology, right? And so, here we go. So you have to come with a consensus. Question one. If reincarnation is real, and Pear Down had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would this band become?
We're all thinking rickets, right?
Yeah, I guess. Is there something where you laugh yourself to death?
Oh, there must be. Yeah, if we want people to, I mean, we want to be lethal, but we want them to die with a smile on their face. Mm. So the death laughing disease.
All right, death laughing disease, fantastic.
Concur.
Yes. All right, question two. Does the band have a collective pet peeve? Something that upsets everybody that really shouldn't, but...
Easter. We're practicing on Easter. Because nobody in the band gives a crap about Easter.
Okay. Yep. Don't like ham. All right. Love it. Okay. Yes. Question three. All right. Let's go morbid. So say this interview didn't go well, and collectively you were to murder me right now. How would you dispose of my body? What's the plan? What are the steps for getting away with it?
I don't know if you guys want to reveal the parts of the estate that these, We're at your house, so it's up to you guys.
The river is not far, yeah. So maybe a Viking funeral, you know?
Oh!
Float him down the creek.
Yeah,
we give him that honor.
Floating down the creek. Burning, yeah. So that his embers reach the river, and
where would he end up if we dropped him in from here?
In the Allegheny River.
Yeah. Yeah. Fate worse than death.
I don't know. See, that's the cleaner one. It's not the mod. Mm-hmm. The mod is.
Yeah. Hey, we've got a convergence.
You do. But I at least hope my drinking water comes from the Allegheny. All right. If the band had to choose, question four. Would you all welcome the total elimination of day or night? If you had to choose, so the Earth is slowly, the rotation is stopping. Don't worry about gravity. It's gravity's still going to work. Atmosphere is still going to be here. Are you rooting that, you know, this part of the world ends up on the night of perpetual, the side of perpetual daytime, yeah. Or the night at the side of perpetual
probably,
night?
I've probably flip-flopped completely in my years on this question, because I would have taken night over day as a 20-year-old, but now... Okay, am I selling that?
Yeah.
Nowadays, I'm more of a day.
Yeah. I worry about the vitamin D.
Yes.
Let there be light.
We're for day.
Day.
All right.
We can sleep in the daytime.
You're right, you know, just need heavy curtains. All right, we're almost out of the woods here. Question five. If you all could unmake any invention, so, like, say, just take some invention out of human history, people alive wouldn't even know that it ever existed. If you could unmake any invention, what would that invention be?
MP3s.
Definitive. Definitive.
I'm with that. We're all physical.
The scourge of music.
What about wave files?
Wave files sound a little better. MP3s, it's just like, you know, I'm speechless. Because they're soundless.
Wait a second, is this podcast going to be an MP3?
Well, unless I, you know, lathe, cut, bundle. But no, I understand that, though, that, I mean, that tinny, awful sound. That, I mean, the MP3, by its nature, right, it doesn't sound very good.
I think there's the philosophical side of it, too, of that it just became that much smaller and that much more disposable. And
Right, there's a lot of levels to it, and you work on something, you try to get a sound a certain way, and then that's not how people are listening to it, you know. So now you have to remaster for that. It's a complex question issue.
Yeah.
So which most people don't even think about. You know, it's like, you know, if you could sit and listen to music on your phone, you know, if you're okay with that, you know, then MP3s is the step up for you. So so I don't know what to say, you know.
I'm not sure I wouldn't go with something more like hydrofracturing or, you know, chemical weapons.
Come on,
MP3s, that's a cool...
Well, this is why Jeff is the brooding one, Dave is the serious one.
Well, and I think there's something to be said, though, for also as a music fan, you know, the commitment of having a physical object, making invisible vibrations into a tangible physical thing.
If we had it our way, I think most musicians are like this. Everybody would be listening to our stuff on a record, you know, on a record player, but it's just not the way things are for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, that's my Miller Lite theory or Bud Light theory of the universe. Mm-hmm. And which is, you know, if you don't really like beer, there's Bud Light. It's beer for people who don't like beer. And in some ways, yeah, I think the MP3 and the streaming thing
can't afford Dogfish.
And people, there's people can't afford Dogfish, but if you really believe in beer, then you find money, you know, okay. you flip those couch cushions three times looking for the change. But you know, there's music. I think there is music for people who don't really like music.
Definitely.
And there's ways of listen. And I think that's the way to listen to that music if you don't really care. Yeah.
Or in commercials or something.
Or in commercials, yeah. But I think, you know, that's the beauty in a weird way of geekdom now, as we live in geekdom, where you can completely indulge in something and really truly love it and truly commit to it in ways that maybe most people don't. I feel bad for those people who don't completely make their aesthetic loves.
Everybody's a geek about something, whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll go with hydrofracture.
All right. I'll go away. Can't drink an MP3. Yes. Well, I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. Thank you all for inviting me into your home, being willing to do this late on a Sunday evening, indulging my own ridiculous pop culture consumption geekdom. Paredown.net is probably the best place for all things Paredown, but there is a Bandcamp. And again, that CD or that cassette release show is April
18th,
2017 at Club Cafe. Because again, the internet might be forever, or there might be bit rot, or not. Anyway, so speaking of bit rot, our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gonnadiepodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Oh, there we go. The scourge of, you know. You mean, you think about it. What iTunes did, too, is they legalized...
Shake it up.
I know, but they legalized stealing, really. Because, you know, you spend 99 cents on a download, and the band gets, like, half a penny, actually.
Somebody agreed to it at some point.
Yeah, and now it's the Borg, and there's no escape. So, speaking of the Borg, follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Later, meets.